And so I encourage you to explore that landscape. When you find yourself emotionally disturbed, feeling disconnected from the heart, to stop thinking about it and just meet yourself in the same way that you would meet another human being who's having a difficult time, from a place of clarity and sanity, right? Not this place of, let me fix you, what should we do? But a place that honors their journey, a place that sees the beauty of what they really are, even though they're temporarily confused right now, and to hold a space for them, a space that says, I love you, without even having to say, I love you. Meet yourself in that space. This topic, stepping out of the mind and into the heart. It's interesting how much our human experience is spent in the mind. And we can look at this without any sort of judgment for that experience, without even thinking it should be a different way. But we can just observe and notice that, my goodness, in appearances, while being human, there's so much thinking. There's so much focus on thinking. And this is, in one regard, beautiful that we can think. That's amazing. And then that thinking contributes so much to our human experience. It allows us to navigate. It allows us to ponder and reflect. It exposes so many beautiful things. It's wise to recognize, though, the experience of thinking is simply an aspect of being human. I'd even suggest it's a small aspect when you look at the total experience of being human. It's just one thing that happens among many things. However, it's not uncommon that thinking becomes the predominant way of functioning as a human being, to the extent that we could say one lives their life in the mind. And this is a great but playful tragedy, where we are consumed by mental content, and then using mental content in a way that mental content is not designed to be used. And if we're not careful, we're just going to create all sorts of disturbances, difficulties, frustrations, when really there's a deeper opportunity to use other tools beyond thinking, more powerful tools. And in the context of this episode, that would be the heart, connecting to the heart, living from the heart, being guided from the heart. And this can be incredibly foreign to many people. And I understand that as I'm speaking to this, people are listening from very different spaces in their journey. Some people are familiar with what that's like, being connected to the heart, and other people, the concept of living from the heart or being in the heart is completely foreign. One of the things that I want to make clear, though, is the role of thinking and the mind, and then also the role or function of the heart space. And I feel that bringing some clarity to what we might call both sides of this coin will help us discern the difference and use each tool appropriately, however that seems appropriate for you. The mind and its ability to think helps us to communicate with one another and then also communicate with ourselves as we navigate a 3- and 4-dimensional experience. And if that seems really foreign to you, to summarize quickly, the 3-dimensional experiences, forward, backward, left, right, up and down. The 4th-dimensional experience would be time, past and future. And the mind is fantastic in helping us navigate that. In order to get from point A to point B, there is some thought that goes into it. To contemplate the past and the future, this is an activity for the mind. But yet, there's another aspect of being human that deals with, let's say, the inner wellness of the human, which doesn't have anything to do with the third or fourth dimension of experience. Meaning that the issue of suffering, of emotional disturbance, has nothing to do with left, right, up, down, forward, backward. And it doesn't have anything to do with past and future. And because of this, using the mind to affect internal wellness is a difficult task, if not impossible, even though at times it can look like it's working. The dimensional experience that deals with internal wellness, I'll playfully say, is a 5th-dimensional experience that is beyond space and time. And that dimensional experience is a dimension of truth and reality. What is real, what is true, beyond space and time. And if that is out of alignment, if we are disconnected from it, then we will experience disturbance. And this, even as it comes out of my mouth, in relationship to the traditional understanding of being human, could maybe sound even more confusing or insane, but I hope to clarify it a little bit. And we'll take our time. And I hope that it wraps up nicely to illustrate how to step out of the mind and into the heart. And I completely failed in the process. Let's look at the nature of emotional unwellness. To be emotionally disturbed, to have an inner sense of wellness that seems absent or distant, the traditional assumption from the mind assumes that this is because space and time does not look how you think it's supposed to look. And so the mind looks to navigate space and time to have it be a certain way, so that we can return to that wellness. And so it uses the mind, looking forward, backward, left, right. It says, how can I put these pieces together so that I can affect the 5th dimension? So that I can affect the internal state of being. However, emotional disturbance is not caused by the state of things in space and time. Emotional disturbance is the result of being disconnected from reality, which is also to say disconnected from the heart. To experience emotional disturbance, one confuses reality for the dream of reality. And in the dream of reality, there's lots of things to be afraid of. And our fear of those things in the dream makes internal wellness an impossibility. You know what is a good illustration of this? And spirituality attempts to point to this in its practices and methods. And this is assuming you have some sort of spiritual practice. You notice how when the mind is chaotic, when you're irritated and frustrated and stressed out, maybe you got your feelings hurt, you recognize how much mind commotion is going on in that. You recognize how there's just so much thinking. Like the mind is moving around in the third and fourth dimension. And then to engage a spiritual practice, one allows themselves to drop into a presence where there's less and less thinking. And as one becomes more and more present, they start to recognize that all of the things they're thinking about aren't really happening. They're recognizing that they're making up stories that aren't true. They're recognizing that what the mind is trying to figure out is impossible. And in recognizing that, you start to realize that your reasons for being emotionally disturbed are not necessary. And in a very profound and real way, everything that is allowed to be, and it's not really a threat. And to illustrate that, maybe it's like somebody cancels plans with you and you're irritated and frustrated and you got your feelings hurt. And then you enter your spiritual practice and you take a chill pill and you realize, oh wait, actually I'm okay. I'm making up a story about what that means about me. And as I'm doing that, I'm trying to figure out a solution in the third and fourth dimension of if only they did this, if only they did that, then I wouldn't be feeling this way, blah, 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 blah. And that's not working. Because now you're just wanting to control people. But as you come back to presence and you come back to stillness, you start to realize, oh, wait, they're allowed to cancel plans. And most importantly, what I think that means about me, it doesn't really mean that about me. I don't need to be afraid of that because it's not true. And so you see the release of the mental content that happens in that. It's like, oh, there's nothing to think about here. The issue of me being emotionally disturbed isn't about something that's happening in space and time. The issue that's leading me to be disturbed is believing in the mind's content, the stories about what's happening in space and time. And then I'm identifying with those stories. And then I'm looking for solutions to those stories with more stories, which goes nowhere. And so in the recognition of that, realizing that the solution is not found in the mind, it's not found in thinking, one becomes more present and connects with reality. Right? And reality isn't here this way, there that way. It's not forward, it's not backward. It's not past and it's not future. It's beyond space and time. It's just eternally present. And you might have heard this reflected in some sort of pointer that says there's nowhere to go and there's nothing to do. That's what that's referring to as it relates to resolving internal conflict, internal drama. There's nowhere to go to resolve it. There's nothing to do. All doing happens in space and time. Doing implies future. The solution is not in the future. The solution is connecting with reality. And so as one becomes more present, understanding that this isn't a tool for the mind, this is where one becomes more connected to the heart. And again, understand that these are just words, right? Because we can say, oh, connected to the heart. What does that even mean? Nothing. It's pointing, right? It's pointing to a deep experience of allowing and the embrace of what is real and authentic. Because traditionally, when one gets disturbed, the assumption is that it's not okay. That I shouldn't be disturbed. I shouldn't feel how I feel. And this is a rejection of what is real and true, right? Because what is real and true and sincere is that something's being felt. And you can reject it all you want. You can should all over it. But the reality of the situation is that this is what's being felt. And it's the mind that does the shooting, which implies, again, future, which is the mind looking to get rid of it in space and time. But the reality of the situation is that it's here. And so stepping into the heart is a space of presence that allows the truth to be the truth, allows the reality to be the reality, and isn't looking, again, in the mind for a strategy of getting rid of it. It's a beautiful embrace of what's showing. Maybe we can illustrate this also as it relates to being in the heart while you are with another human being, right? Relate from the heart. Do you see how relating to the heart or from the heart with another human, there's this embrace for the other human to be the human. There's the embrace for them to feel what they feel. There's an embrace that honors their experience, right? And you see, these are all words that illustrate an allowing for reality to be reality. There's nowhere to go. There's nothing to do. There's an openness that allows it to be what it is. And again, it's not the story about what is. It's not the mind's commentary about what is. There's nothing to do, which means there's nothing even to think about. It's just allowed. In this illustration, in connecting with other humans from the space of the heart, speaks so much about connecting with yourself from the space of the heart, which is, can you hold a space, welcome to the program, that allows the sincerity of what is as it relates to your internal state of being? Can you meet yourself in the disturbance? Or are you in such a hurry to get rid of it? And how do you get rid of it? In space and time, you think about it. And in your thinking about it, there's an energy of rejecting it. Like it's not worthy of love. It's not worthy to be. And one of the fastest ways we try to get rid of it. And this is one of those tools in the mind that is misguided, is through this something called blame. We experience internal disease, and then we want to blame something in the third or fourth dimension as the cause. And that helps us create distance from it. It helps us avoid it, right? Like, oh, I'm irritated because that person is just an asshole. And you see how that helps you step away from the internal disease? The instrument of blame is like a medical procedure that doesn't deal with the underlying root cause. It just covers up the symptom. It helps you to avoid the real issue so that you don't have to meet the real issue. This is so beautifully profound. And my apologies if I'm butchering the... I'm attempting to articulate this in a way that I haven't used words for it before. And so I'm playing here. But the mind has so many learned, ineffective strategies for resolving the internal dis-ease, which is really putting a band-aid over the symptom. And this is why over time, there's a sort of, playfully speaking, rotting away of our connection with the heart space, and we just become more blameful and spiteful and resentful and disconnected with the beauty in life. Because we're not meeting the beauty of reality. We're not meeting the beauty of our own heart and the sincerity of what's going on inside of us. We're just running away from it. As it relates to stepping out of the mind, do you see what I'm pointing to here? Where we step out of the mind because we recognize this is not a job for the mind. For example, if I'm going to connect deeply with another human being, I have to step out of my thinking about that human being. I have to release the other human being, which fully allows them to be them, which allows me to be incredibly present. And it's that presence that I would suggest is connecting with the heart. And we can look at the dilemma in our human experience and see how that dilemma is consumed by mental commentary about yourself, thinking about yourself, thinking about who you think you are, thinking about your past, thinking about your future, thinking about this way, thinking about that way, and on and on and on and on. There isn't the moment of just truly being with what's felt. Because if we were to sincerely be with what is felt, and again, this isn't thinking about what you feel. Maybe an illustration is the example I've used many times where the child gets their feelings hurt and they run home to mom. And the unconditional love in mom isn't thinking about the child's dilemma. The unconditional love in the mom is just saying, come here, let me hold you. Right? Because the unconditional love in the mom understands that this isn't a thinking dilemma. This is an innocent misunderstanding between the mind's content and reality, where the child is temporarily confused about what's real and is looking to come back to reality and does so in love's embrace. And as the child is held by mom, without mom having to say anything, even though things might be said, the child slowly remembers that all is well. And then in that space of wellness, in that space of love's embrace, there's an insight that is shared from life that helps to clarify the misunderstanding. And this is recognized in the spiritual practice once one becomes present, that essentially what I think is happening isn't really happening. And you can think about that, and that can take you on a fun journey in the mind, but the reality is the invitation to embrace reality and to let go of the dream. And also to remember that the dream, the thinking world, is meant for navigation. It's not meant to find your identity, which is another really important point, which I'm glad it's arising, is that the root of our disturbance is looking for self-identity in the third and fourth dimension, in space and time. And the identity of what you really are isn't located there, which is also saying the identity of what you really are isn't in the mind. That's the confusion. That's what leads to all suffering, is an identification with the mind's content. In fact, if you look at any of your suffering, you will find that it all revolves around who you think you are. And the more you become present, you realize nothing's actually happening to the reality of what you are. It's only happening to who you think you are. And then the mind tries to think its way out of that, which is a disaster. And even as I explain these things, you understand I'm using the mind to talk about something that isn't in the mind, which is hilarious. And so in the absurdity in talking about what exists outside of the mind while using the mind, in summary, what I'm pointing to is a very deep recognition that the mind cannot resolve the inner dilemma of emotional dis-ease, even though it looks like it can, and that's fine. However, there's an aspect to a deeper and more expansive part of what you are before the mind that is a direct access point to resolving emotional disturbance, which comes through presence, a deep allowing, and the absence of judgment, which is the mind. And so I encourage you to explore that landscape. When you find yourself emotionally disturbed, feeling disconnected from the heart, to stop thinking about it, to stop trying to do something, and just meet yourself in the same way that you would meet another human being who's having a difficult time from a place of clarity and sanity, right? Not this place of, let me fix you, what should we do, etc., but a place that honors their journey, a place that sees the beauty of what they really are, even though they're temporarily confused right now. And to hold a space for them. A space that says, I love you, without even having to say, I love you. Meet yourself in that space. Again and again and again and again. And then see what happens. Come home to yourself. Come home to life. We're gonna see what's happening in the Q and R section, questions and reflections. I guess it's also wise to mention, in, I guess we'll just call it society, and within the education, not just school, but societal education, there's such an emphasis on thinking and thinking and thinking. There's such an emphasis on doing, on the idea that the solution exists in the future. And also that emotional disturbance is the result of something in the third or fourth dimension. And it's just not the case. So as far as I'm concerned, you know, in a very compassionate and beautiful way, the world's fucking crazy. As it relates to understanding what's actually happening within the human experience. And that confusion creates so much additional discord. That's a great point, Nancy. She says, I understand what you're saying, but there are some actions that are hurtful to another, and it doesn't seem like we put similar emphasis on our effect on others. There's a doorway of exploration in that, Nancy, that I feel is valuable once there's a heart-based understanding of what I'm really pointing to. Because if you really grasp what I'm pointing to, not just intellectually, when it's deeply seen, there's no more violence in you, meaning that there's no interest in taking anything from others, which means it's impossible to hurt anyone. And we have to be careful in how that's interpreted, especially in today's society, with the assumption that we get our feelings hurt because of what other people do. Because in one regard, there can be no interest in me in hurting another human being. But that doesn't mean that in the work I do, people aren't going to be offended. Yet there's a liberation within what I am that encourages people to be offended if they're going to be offended. Encourage them to be hurt if they're going to be hurt. And I don't take responsibility for other people's interpretation, which is the source of emotional hurt. Yet at the same time, I'm not disconnected from the hurt, which is to say, if they have something to say about their experience of being hurt in relation to me, I'm super open to hear and listen. And if that's relatively unclear, what I would just point back to again is, see the truth of what you are, and it will resolve in all issues that you might have of hurting other people. And again, you say there are some actions that are hurtful to another. Yes, in the dream of being human, that appears to be true. But also in my own direct experience, there are no actions of another that can be hurtful to me. Only I can do that. There's no action that anybody else can do that can be the cause of my suffering. That would be insanity. And so likewise, again, be cautious in the interpretation. It goes the other way.